Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Whether we're working in or out of the office, every day our teams are reimagining what it means to connect and produce incredible results. Atlassian's remote-friendly software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help your team work effectively by connecting your entire organization in one shared digital workspace. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So, work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genAI to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway.
Scott, what's going on today? Do you hear the CEO of Parler, John Matz, got fired?
So are you wearing his ears around your neck like some warrior who's killed people?
I didn't kill him. I just showed he had bad judgment.
A little bit.
It started the ball rolling. For sure, I kicked the ball and it moved it down the hill. That is for sure. I think he then made a lot of moves afterwards. First of all, it was a bad judgment. He really had a lot of bad judgment in that interview and said things on literally the wrong time. Like read the room that's being attacked at the Capitol, essentially. And then I think he continued to do bad interviews. He sued Amazon, which he never was going to win, you know, for not hosting Parler.
Antitrust.
The whole thing, every behavior he had afterwards, what he's now saying is because he wanted to moderate the platform and Rebecca Mercer, who's an easy target as a villain, and I suspect she's a villain almost all the time, pretty much all the time. I think that... he's using her as the excuse, but I think some of his management techniques were not very smart in general.
I know nothing about this story because I don't know. Well, you can't because it's your job, but I have purposefully avoided all news about our former president, about my pillow guy. I used to watch Fox occasionally just to kind of understand the viewpoint. I don't care about follow politics. And you know what? I find that I won't say I'm mentally healthy, but I'm less mentally fucked up.
Yeah,
I really think there's a big sigh of relief.
Yes, there is.
And a giant walk outside the last few weeks just trying to avoid all this shit, all the crazy. Yeah. I don't even want to hear about this congresswoman from Georgia. I'm just okay, fine.
Let me give you the short version. Crazy. They didn't discipline her, and now the Democrats are going to. They didn't discipline her. Then again, they didn't kick out Liz Cheney for doing her job, which was interesting. Yeah, that was. It's interesting that the whole thing is sort of kabuki, and they need to focus on
stimulus.
So
does Parler, but from your viewpoint, does Parler have a role? Is Parler going to be, are the backers of Parler going to make money? Is Parler a phenomena?
No, I think it's gone. I think it's not up. They've got to build it back up. They missed their big opportunity was after Trump got kicked off of Twitter, and now that's passed. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people are going to be rushing to it. They've gone to Telegram. They've already made their, you know, the crazies have already made their choice, and it's not going to be Parler anymore. And so I think it's finished.
I don't know if it's the same thing. It's a messaging app. I'm getting a lot of people saying, hit me up on Signal.
Signal or Telegram. Those are two encrypted messaging apps. And one has more, I forget which one, I think it's Signal, has more ability to have groups and things like that. For the real right-wingers, there's MeWe, I think it's called MeWe, another one's called, I'm blanking. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of them they can go to. But it's not as good as a public forum, and it's not as good as Facebook. And so, you know, that's where they really organized. It was on Facebook and essentially Parler and some other places that were just out in the open. So we'll see. Anyway, he's gone. We'll see what his story is, see if he'll throw Rebecca Mercer under the bus. But she's always sort of in the shadows of all these really unpleasant things that have to do with our democracy. So perhaps he will have some things to say about her that will give us more illumination. Under acting chair Jessica Rosenworcel, the FCC is expanding the broadband services discount program to cover remote schooling, mm-hmm. which is exciting.
Exciting.
It's the new FCC. Jessica's really an interesting chair, and I hope she gets the job itself. She's was sort of polar opposite to Ajit Pai. So that's super interesting what's happening there. And we'll see what we're going to get from the FCC. The FCC's been kind of quieter in the Trump administration and not done as much. What are you thinking of this week?
So you mean the plan to try and give broadband to everybody?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look, the Economist did a study, and as broadband increases in a nation, it's correlated to GDP growth.
Indeed.
Broadband has become one of those things. Again, we like to think the government's bad at everything. No, government is really good at defending our shores. They're really good at making sure that seniors don't end up homeless. They're really good at ensuring, I should say, they're really good most of the time at ensuring we have clean, safe drinking water. Mm-hmm. And broadband, they're great at the essentials, and they're great at things that require a forward-leaning investment.
If they can do it, but not here they haven't been. Here they haven't been at all.
But that's what I'm saying. I think it's the opportunity.
Well, except it's been going on. I mean, Scott, years ago, Walt and I interviewed the then, I can't even remember who the FCC chairman was at the time, and we put up a chart right before we interviewed him that showed that the U.S. was the most expensive broadband in the world. And, like, I think we were behind Latvia, down at, like, 17 or some number that was really an embarrassment.
We've let companies come in that are very deft and have a lot of lobbyists figure out a way to segment the market and create semi-regulated monopolies, which are a transfer of wealth from our citizens to these companies. And while big tech are unregulated monopolies, that's even worse. What I'm basically advocating is that if you were to South Korea, basically a strategy nationally for their nation in terms of competitive advantage relative to their peer group, is they decided, I think 30 years ago, they were going to flood the nation in bandwidth and a government supported initiative. What I'm saying here is just as like I love infrastructure. I would love to see nothing more, and I'm so angry.
Would you like to lead Infrastructure Week for Pete Buttigieg?
It's just really fascinating. If you think about our airways, how much infrastructure, the invisible infrastructure of our airways, and how the air traffic control turns airspace into this unbelievable asset for all of us. Anyways, the same thing is true of broadband, but I find it just so disheartening to think that, okay, we spent $5 trillion to mostly keep the rich with these bailouts, and we could have done something. We could have had literally high-speed rail across the entire nation
indeed.
Three times over. We could have done something like this and ensured that every household in America had lightning-fast broadband. Anyways,
I
like big
are
infrastructure.
Fucked up is what is gone. This is something I've talked about for years and years and years. It's literally like saying to people, during the time we put telephones everywhere, which is critically important, hey, everybody, here's a can and a string. Good luck. Like, we would never have done this. These are the kind of things. And especially now with this remote schooling, like, it should be, it should be priority number one for everybody, by the way. Remote schooling for the ability to reach schools. It's just ridiculous.
It's
the
your
same
ability
thing.
To learn. It's your ability to step on news. It's your ability to form, even now, relationships. It's your ability to communicate with your – I mean, there's just – show me a family that has low broadband that's interrupted because of economic strain or for whatever reasons, and I'm going to show you a family that the kids start to fall behind.
Yep.
So this is, I mean, it's this is a great moment. Let's say, all right, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We have an opportunity to look at this and say, all right, what do we leave behind? Do we leave behind emissions? Do we leave behind forcing, workers to commute if they can be home 2 or 3 days? You know, what do we leave behind? And one of the things we could leave behind is the notion that the private sector is the best. Is the best way to solve every problem.
Yeah, this should be. If I read one more story of poor kids doing their homework from Taco Bell, I'm going to just really lose my mind. We're going to have Jessica Rosenworcel on the show. That's my new decision.
Well, it reminds me of those pictures of Africa.
I'm making an executive decision here. Go ahead.
Have you seen these pictures of Africa? Paul Romer, a colleague at Stern and a Nobel Prize winner who talks about growth. His Nobel Prize was around growth. And he had this really moving photo that he always uses of kids studying under parking lot light.
Yep, I've seen that picture. Yeah.
And that's where we're headed.
It's ridiculous.
That's where we're going.
We are going to have Jessica Rosenworcel here, and she's going to tell us about this. And by the way, it shouldn't be a discount program. It should be free. Thank you very much. That's my platform. Yeah. That's what I'm running on.
It's good ROI.
So let's get to the big story. Speaking of people who are taking charge of rather big places and someone who could probably provide us with bandwidth easily, like tomorrow, this is a big story. The end of an era. Jeff Bezos is stepping down as CEO of Amazon. He's going to stay executive chairman. In Amazon's quarterly earnings call this week, Bezos announced that 27 years after founding Amazon, he'd be stepping aside as CEO and moving on to the executive chairman role, which is a very active role. Let's be clear, he's not going anywhere. Andy Jassy will be the new CEO of Amazon. He previously was head of AWS, Amazon's cloud, very successful cloud computing business, which represents 62% of its profits and 12% of its business. So very successful group over there that Andy runs. The transition will officially take place in the third quarter of this year, which starts in July. So Andy Jassy, here he is.
Wow.
Now, we're going to get to the other things that happened at Amazon. Meanwhile, the same day, the Federal Trade Commission, they sort of knocked this story off the blocks, announced that sanctions against Amazon will pay $61.7 million to settle allegations that the company cheated gig drivers out of tip money. This is a story that happens all over the delivery space. It's not new to Amazon.
Hello, DoorDash.
All of them. What is wrong with them? So in 2015, Amazon advertised a program that called Flex that would pay drivers up to $25 an hour to make deliveries that they could receive 100% of any tips. But in late 2016, Amazon secretly reduced its own contribution to drivers' pay, according to FTC. Anyway, they paid the money. It's not a huge amount of money, but it's not nice. It's not nice. In any case, Andy Jassy was not responsible for that, he's going to now be the CEO. I know him quite well. He's an interesting character.
So before we even get to that, though, I do think it warrants a moment of recognition that Jeff Bezos, his career. Look, no one man in history has taken a company from zero to $1.7 trillion. No one person has established a recurring revenue relationship with 82% of households. No one person has had a company hire 500,000 people in 1 year. No one person has revolutionized e-commerce, revolutionized cloud, revolutionized voice. This is, as he stands here today, and there is a dignity and discipline to leaving the stage while people are clapping, he goes out or leaves the CEO role as the bluest, you know, the bluest flame thinker in the history of business. And also, I have been very critical. I don't think they can acquit themselves well, gamifying the Commonwealth, some of the things you just read about. But the reality is, you know, I've owned stock in Amazon since 2007. They're the largest recruiter of young men and women out of my class. It's given them an enormous, a wonderful start to building economic security. You know, you just got to recognize what he has done. It is just staggering what he has accomplished. Now, the most exciting thing, the most exciting thing, and there's an analogy here or a metaphor or a correlation, whatever it is, a reference to Bill Gates. Bill Gates, when he retired, was not that well liked. People saw him as someone who really threw around his elbows in business. Up until the point he retired, he was not very philanthropic. The last 25 years for Jeff Bezos have been meaningful for our society, but the next 25 years could be profound.
We'll
see. If he were to put those resources and that brain to work on some really big problems, you know, he could have an incredibly profound impact over the next quarter century.
He could. If only someone actually knew him back then in the early days and knows Andy Jassy well and could comment on it. I wonder who that person is. Me.
So please comment.
I like your thoughts. You know, he has had a very, you know, he was a very interesting guy. He, again, started off later in his life. He was not young. It was very pleasant to talk to him because he wasn't a 12-year-old when I was covering early Amazon. Very enthusiastic, super friendly to the press until he wasn't. And someone who really did have a vision that was very clear, a very data-driven vision and enthusiasm for what he was doing. And a tough guy. I mean, a lot of people think of him as sort of this laughing, you know, guffaw guy, but he's really a tough customer. And in terms of, we've had a lot of tangles over the years, causing us not to talk for a while over something that he thought he was right on and was very clear. And so he's a really interesting character, but I definitely think his ideas, someone was arguing to me on Twitter the other day whether he was a visionary, because I said in a column I wrote in the Times that he was, you know, I compared him to positively with Jobs and Musk. And I said, except he's sort of meaner, you know what I mean? Or more obstreperous and more aggressive than those two alpha dogs. And, And someone was like, no, he's not. He's not. I was like, he's 100% visionary. What he did and continued to be innovative at Amazon compared to any other CEO. Oh, Mark Zuckerberg borrows staggering. Things. Gates borrows things. Like, you know what I mean?
You know, it's the boring stuff that yeah. was so impressive. He did yeah. a couple of things. He decided fulfillment used to be something. Williams-Sonoma yeah. was a cost center, and it took them 2 weeks to get your Calphalon when you ordered it online. And yeah. he said, if we can get people things, if we can move people to things and decrease the delta in the reward of immediacy, it's going to revolutionize retail. And it's super boring. And he spent hundreds of billions yep. of dollars on it. No one wanted to spend hundreds of millions on it, but that was just a unique way to look at things. And the other thing that people don't talk enough about, that's just such the jujitsu move of the ages, he took their biggest cost centers, fulfillment, processing power, bandwidth, he took their biggest cost centers and turned them into enormous profit centers in the yeah. form of businesses they sold to other businesses. No one's been yeah. able to look at their expense line and say, okay, yeah. we're going to take our biggest expenses and figure out how to make them not only lower and smarter, but how to start selling them to other places. And by the way, the most valuable company in the world isn't Amazon, it's AWS. And
yeah. well,
with the appointment of Jassy, yeah. basically Amazon is now a cloud company. I one of the things I've been thinking through second order effects, I thought they would spin AWS
yeah.
because Jassy, any guy like Jassy wakes up in the morning and looks in the mirror and says, hello, Mr.
No,
good
he
morning,
does
Mr.
not.
CEO.
You're wrong. Once again, because you don't
actually know
him.
Do you know, man?
Do I know Andy Jassy and you don't?
Come
I've interviewed
on.
Him 100 times.
Oh, you think
times.
He thought, I just want to be number two the rest of my life.
No, I don't think so. I think he's a very different kind of character. He's much more like Satya Nadella. He's a very good leader. He was Jeff's technical chief of staff. I remember when he got there, actually, at Amazon. He was coming out of Harvard Business School. And actually, what was really astonishing is Jeff, in 2003, let him do this Skunk Works, which became AWS, you know, just go off and do it. And they opened it in, I think, 2006. And so I think he's quite entrepreneurial. He's a very entrepreneurial guy. And he also likes being Jeff Bezos's number two. He does. He's like Jeff in a lot of ways. Much nicer in a lot of ways. Very, he's different in personality in some ways, but he loved having this in. And when I interviewed him last year, if you remember at Code, he was like, I thought he was telling the truth, that he would do it if the government made him, but he didn't see any reason to do it.
The spin of AWS.
Yes. He said he'd do it if he was forced to, and the government should tell him. Same thing around facial recognition. If they want this, he's not going to be the moral arbiter. If they want it regulated, they should regulate it. But he did not want to spin it off. I've asked him dozens and dozens of times over the
years.
Well,
the likelihood that it happens now just went mm-hmm. down, because now Andy is no longer the king of the North. He sits on the Iron Throne of Westeros. Yeah. And all of a sudden, he's going to want to keep the companies together. And I did CNN yesterday
yeah.
and the FT, like, why now? Why did he step down? And I'm like, what, wouldn't you? He wants to, Jeff Bezos has rung every bell and he wants to spend 2021, he wants to spend more time at the Cannes Film Festival and the Oscars and not in a Senate and not in a House subcommittee meeting.
He didn't want to come back to Amazon. He had come back because of the pandemic. It's sort of a signal the pandemic's over. You know what I mean? Because
that's
he did
an interesting
come back.
Way to look at it.
Yeah,
that's a very interesting way to look at it.
He had to come back to do that. And of course, other people retired. Jeff Wilke, who was the other contender for this job, who I never thought was going to get it. I always thought it was Andy, retired earlier. And so I think he was like, Jeff does not want to spend 1 minute of the day doing anything Jeff Bezos doesn't want to do. And he didn't like any of the political stuff.
Wealth, you know, we talked about broadband being correlated to GDP growth. Wealth is correlated to no. Wealth is the ability to say no.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things in his life as the CEO of a company that, quite frankly, is a monopoly that people feel has grown too powerful that he can't say no to. When he gets called and hauled in front of his House subcommittee, and they start asking questions, and he has to think he has to spend probably days with lawyers prepping for this thing, and then have Jim Jordan ask him questions, Representative Jordan, or, you know, so not being CEO, it reattaches him to his ability. Being the wealthiest man in the world means he is the king or queen of no, and he reattaches to that. He can
Andy does take the temperature down. Jeff is a lightning rod for people. You know, he's a character. He's Yeah, I think Andy, he'll be like Tim Cook. Like, you know how Tim didn't get that many questions? Andy's the same way. He sort of absorbs, like, he's not.
He seems very likable. He seems
he's
like,
very
I describe
likeable.
Him as Midwestern, and I have no idea where he's from.
No, he's from Scarsdale.
Scarsdale. He looks like he grew up. He acts like he's from Wisconsin.
He's like a, you know, upper middle class kid from Scarsdale. It'll be interesting because he'll absorb that. He'll be able, and I think Jeff will actually take in executive chairman, will be sort of the ambassador for that because people always want to meet him and stuff. And I think a lot of people in the Biden administration said Amazon started to reach out to see how they can help. They didn't want to help the Trump administration. And of course, the Trump administration didn't want to be helped by Jeff Bezos. And so that's that weird obsession that, Trump had with Bezos is gone. And so Amazon's trying to make their way into doing helpful things with their logistics around the vaccine. And I've just heard that from various Biden people. And so that should be interesting. They have to do that because Andy faces a lot of stuff around not just this Federal Trade Commission thing, which was many years ago and shitty what they did, but also antitrust issues around the unions. Amazon's been extraordinarily tough on union organization. Okay. Stuff around workers and the marketplace issue. So there's a lot that he's going to have to deal with from a regulatory point of view. So I'll be interested in I don't even know who they have in Washington, but what they do here. I suspect Jeff will be here more. They'll bring him out for the star power that he has always had. And I think he'll be a little more active than in politics than you realize. And he has this big house here in Washington. So he may do the charm offensive while Andy deals with it, with a lot of it. But it'll be interesting who they get to run all the retail stuff. They've got a huge bench all over the place at this company. Not many people leave, which is the other issue is diversity. These people have been in these jobs. Andy started when he was a kid. All the executives started when they were kids.
This is a huge point. And it's another one of the kind of boring PSA or cholesterol test that indicates the kind of underlying health of the organization. I read that the turnover at Snap and Twitter among senior management is around 25 or 30% a year. 1 in 3 leave.
Yeah.
At Amazon, it's 2%.
None.
So that they have done something where everyone, these are some of the
Jeff.
Most.
It's culty.
Well, it's not, okay, but that's looking at as the glass half empty.
Yeah.
Okay, so the word culture
not
comes
culty.
From
they
the
like
word
working.
Cult.
They, yeah.
People with tremendous opportunities. Yeah. I mean, these are people, obviously very talented people that a lot of companies, they receive a lot of calls from headhunters and they all say, you know what? Looking at the people I work with, look at the opportunities, looking at the economic and psychic rewards, I'm going to stay at Amazon. I mean, that just says something about the company.
Andy was in line for the Uber job. You know, he was thinking about his options. And I remember joking with him when I saw him. So he's like, I was like, you missed that bullet. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, seriously, he was in line for a lot of jobs. He was always, he really liked running AWS. He really didn't want to spin it off and be his own CEO. So now he just waited. He's sort of like Iger, sort of waited in the wings for the big job. Mm-hmm. You know how Eisner just drummed everybody else out of there.
He was Steve Young, waiting for Joe Montana to retire.
Yeah, just like that kind of thing. I think it'll be an interesting
analogy from the dog.
He has an interesting thing of how he wants to do it and how he wants to differentiate himself. I hope he does. I hope he has like a Tim Cook moment because Tim has certainly differentiated himself from Jobs, and I'm going to leave the bomber years out because we're just going to ignore them at Microsoft because I think that was just an extension of Gates and not very successful.
You know what? A lot of people think Bomber didn't get the credit he deserved. Satya kind of came in and built. So during Bomber, doubled revenue and they quadrupled profits.
Yeah, he missed some turns. He missed
mobile, social, search. He missed kind of the biggest movements in tech. Other than that, Kara.
He was so weird. I told you that story. We were at
Good dancer, Steve Ballmer.
I like Steve Ballmer now. I didn't before. He hated me for the longest time.
That's impossible to imagine. Kara.
He and I had a test. But now we're like, he's doing all this cool stuff with his team and some political data stuff. I think he's become rather, I wouldn't say lovable.
Everybody wants
more.
To be Mark Cuban. Everyone wants to be like the affable,
which,
strategic.
I just have a podcast with him today, which you may listen to.
Basketball-owning billionaire Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
Who told the Wall Street Bets guys to hold the line. By the way,
just listen to my podcast, but I have an hour talking
when
to
someone
him.
Tells you to hold the line, that means you're about to get a spear in the chest.
What? You and Mark Cuban have a lot in common. I literally have him talking about free the nipple. There's a whole section of his motto, free the nipple, and how to fix content moderation. I would think you and he would get along rather well.
I like Mark. I've met him at South by Southwest. I like him a lot.
I know. Well, you should listen to it, because there's a whole Scott Galloway moment where I had
to shut
him down.
He's got a really nice TikTok account with his daughter. I think he puts himself out there. I like it.
Yeah. I had to shut him down.
Likeable. You just shouldn't tell young men to hold the line.
Yeah.
When he's already rich and they're not. Anyways.
Andy will be interesting. So you and I have both suggested this move for Mark Zuckerberg. I wanted Mark to step down. You wanted Mark to, and like become executive chairman. I put someone like Brad Smith from Microsoft in place, someone who's believable as someone who's not going to screw everyone and will try to do something. What do you think? Do you think Mark is now thinking, I don't want to go to Congress anymore and stare into the Klieg lights like I'm a deer kind of thing? What do you think?
I think Mark, generally speaking, I think the people in big tech are generally speaking good people who incrementally get tempted and get so sick of getting talked to and scolded all the time that they get on their heels and they have trouble seeing their company. Look, when it's raining money,
it
blurs your vision. But I don't want to say I forgive them. I think generally speaking, they're good people, except I think Mark Zuckerberg is a strange person, and I think he demonstrates the behavior of a sociopath. I'm the victim, totally detached from the harm, constant returning everything to this, an ability to lie. I think he's shown a tremendous ability to say things that just aren't.
So he is not leaving, you're saying. He is sticking.
Let me put it this way.
He's holding, as they say, holder.
He is an exception. I can sort of relate to these other guys, just given their age and everything. I have no idea what is running through that guy's brain. I have no, what do you think? I couldn't predict anything that Mark Zuckerberg is planning to do.
I think both he and Sheryl are going to move along, I think.
Both of them. And you think they'll bring in someone from the outside to be safe? That would be the shareholder-driven thing to do, to hit the reset button.
Because Sheryl's not going to take over for him. That's not going to happen now, because they need to clear the whole thing out. And I think it's a perfect, the Bezos move gives them a little more permission to do this. I think that they will bring in a significantly, not better, but more someone with a better reputation, CEO, and that's where they're going to go. I think that's what's going to happen.
I think personally, I think the individual, and he's probably just having a great time. But I really think there's the lesson here is that you want to leave a party 10 minutes early versus 10 minutes late. And if you're an NFL player, you can't do that, because an NFL player,
you only have certain time, right?
An NFL player is making $5 to $8 million a year, I think is the average salary. And once they leave, it's very difficult to make that kind of money. So you sort of play it out until you get cut. But these guys have made so much money and accomplished so much. I think there's a real, you want to leave the party 10 minutes early. I think Tim Cook, if I were Tim Cook, what does he have left to accomplish?
Oh, no, he's staying. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think this is the job he's always wanted, and think he'll play it out for another 10 years.
Wow, really?
I think Mark is young. That's the issue. Like, what does he look, even as rich as you are, and I know you and I would be perfectly fine with all the money and we'd fly all over and do crazy things, but this guy doesn't have anywhere else to go. Like, he likes what he does too. And so he's young, and what does the rest of his life look like if he leaves Facebook?
Yeah, but that's why, and I've said this before, he's the most dangerous person in the world. And we said, Trump will be with us for, the immunity's kicked in and he was voted out of office. Mm-hmm. Biology will take care of Putin. But we have someone who controls the content of what one third of the globe absorbs is comfortable giving them algorithms of amplification that divide their society. And he could be with us for another 50 years because of a dual class shareholder system.
I would suggest he takes the exit pod that has been offered him by this Jeff Bezos move. That's what I say. I would suggest he get in the exit pod and fly off and do something important for the world. That's what I would say. And then, like, lecture us about whatever billionaire idea he has. and put some money to
my
or be like Mackenzie Scott, Jeff's ex-wife, who just gives away money.
She's a gangster.
Oh, I love her.
She's a gangster. She just said, the nation is hurting. I'm not going
to. Here's some money. Yeah. No strings. I'm trying to get her to come on the podcast. I used to know her well. But I haven't talked to her in a long time. And everyone I talked to is like, we don't know how to reach them. They just handed us the check and said, good luck. They didn't have any strings. She didn't want to have any press conferences. She didn't want to. They don't even know who to call. They're like, we got a call. The check came. We cashed it. That was the whole encounter, essentially.
I told you my story.
I love it. I told you my story
about Mackenzie Scott, right?
Who wants to be a millionaire?
Yeah, I was at DLD talking about Bezos, and a woman comes up to me and says, I think I can help you be more effective. And I'm like, well, that's passive aggressive.
Right. Okay.
I said, sure. And she said, you need to give Mackenzie Scott more responsibility for the role she played early on at Amazon. Yeah. And I said, that's interesting. Tell me more about it. And we started talking, really intelligent, interesting woman. Right. And I'm like, what's your background? Da, da, da. I was CTO of the U.S. government. I'm like, were you married to Kara Swisher?
Oh, yes.
That was your ex-wife. And we sat there and laughed, and then we took a picture and sent it to you. I'm like, it just makes sense that someone that used to mate, who was your life partner, would show up and give me shit.
Oh, she's a nice lady. Listen, Mackenzie does deserve a lot more credit. I say that all the time. I wrote a whole column about it.
Literally tracked me down.
Did she?
Like, you don't give her the credit.
She tracks me down every day. We have children. Anyway, we're going to go to a quick break.
Times a million.
All right, Scott, let's go to a quick break.
You're choosing your words very carefully.
When we come back, Mark, take the exit pod. When we get back, we'll talk about Bezos' nemesis, Elon Musk, and the happenings with Tesla and SpaceX.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
It's important that we don't try to use an understanding of productivity from the industrial era when people were sitting shoulder to shoulder in a factory setting. When employees are designing their workdays around their most important work, not just reacting to messages and attending meetings, they're more productive.
That's Annie Dean, Global Head of Team Anywhere at Atlassian. She's leading the mission to empower her 11,000-plus teammates to work from, well, anywhere.
The office isn't dead, it's just not the solution to effective teamwork. Without Team Anywhere, we would probably need about double the amount of office space we have today. And that translates into meaningful annual savings that we can invest in other key company priorities.
Those savings get invested in creating the technology for Atlassian customers, like Jira, Loom, and Confluence.
We believe that this is a more human way to work, and that's something that should be celebrated. One of my favorite things is when 3 o'clock rolls around and my two boys come home from school and they both know that they're allowed to interrupt my meeting to give me a kiss. That's something that I never got when I was in the office every single day.
Learn how Atlassian software helps power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Okay, Scott, we're back. Now, speaking of visionary founders, sort of the opposite, Jeff Bezos' opposite, he's also, Jeff is going to do a lot of space stuff. He's going to move on to Blue Origin and build that city in the sky, et cetera. Let's do a check-in on a few Elon Musk-related stories. You know, he's removed himself from Twitter for a little while again.
I heard he's back.
Is he back?
I heard he took a whole 48 hours off of Twitter. Now he's
like
back.
You. He's like you, like a lot of people.
You mean bad at Twitter? No, he's much
better
at Twitter.
No, just like can't quit it. SpaceX, Elon Musk, SpaceX is planning his first all-civilian crew to space at the end of the year. Big risk for him. He's talked about this before. He said that this is an important milestone towards enabling access to space for everyone, adding that it's part of SpaceX's broader goal to bring the cost down over time and make space accessible for all. As you know, he wants us to be a multi-planetary group of people here on the planet. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, this week, a test flight of SpaceX's Starship, which is designed to fly to Mars in the future, crashed. But that's okay. SpaceX is an incredible success, I think,
incredible.
In many ways.
It is incredible.
Tesla recalls. This was one, again, a lot of companies have, a lot of companies have recalls,
yep.
A lot of car companies.
Yeah.
This week, Tesla recalled some of its cars, 130,000 vehicles. These cars had an issue with the touchscreen computer chips, and they can't fix it in the way they do, which is over the air. And the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration considers it a safety issue because drivers lose the display for the camera's backup camera. It's not the most serious problem, but it's a problem. Musk appeared on Monroe Live podcast and even agreed that it might be a good time to buy a Model S as they ramp up the design. Took a 14-second break from Twitter. It's really interesting, you know, and of course, he was very involved in the GameStop run-up. It was with GameStonks.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What do you think?
Well, anything.
He's also the richest man in the world, unless Bezos is. They keep trading that slot.
Yeah, that's incredible. Elon Musk has added the GDP of Hungary to his personal net worth since the pandemic broke out. And like, and I'm scared to say this because I was so wrong around Tesla, but I think there's a bubble inflating around what I'll call just space. And that is, it's exciting, but when you look at the different technologies where the hype was ahead of the reality, you think about 3D printing or you think about wearables, I think that space is, I think it's a dangerous and expensive domain. And it's super exciting. SpaceX of all of them, Boeing has tried to put people into space or have launch capabilities. SpaceX is executing like no one's business. I mean, they have their technology. They got people to the International Space Station faster than anybody else. Mm-hmm. It's an inspiring company. Blue Origin will be interesting. I think space travel might be one of those things that the government needs to be involved in, because I don't know if, at least in the short term, it's commercially viable. It is so expensive and so dangerous, quite frankly. So we'll see,
I think it's great. I think it's great. I think Bezos will be focused a lot on it. Well, the point I made around these two people is that what's really fascinating is the two richest people in the world, in this world, in history of the world, want to get off the planet. Like, consider it important that we get off the planet in some fashion. And both are worried about these existential crises.
I think they want to be.
No, I think Elon, that's how he's going to go. I will never see him again. I think he's going to get on. I don't know about Bezos, but I think Elon's getting
where?
To Mars. He's going to try to go to Mars.
Do you know what? Do you know what life on Mars?
Distinctive
movies. Distinctive movies with Matt Damon. Do you know what it's like on Mars?
I know, but Elon wants to be king of Mars.
It makes the top of Everest seem like the Caribbean and a nice place to live.
I'm telling you, he wants to do it. I do not disbelieve him when he says it. I have to say, he says a lot of crazy stuff, and I don't believe him.
He's way too smart to do that.
I don't know. I think he's going to be. He would like to. Let me just say he would.
He's going to be like Mars, St. Bart's, SoCal. I'll go with St. Bart's.
That's not the kind of person he is.
I'll go St. Bart's.
No, yeah. That's you, Scott. You don't channel
100%.
Yourself. That's you. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Tesla and others moving forward. But I think his heart is in SpaceX and he is really interested.
It's an incredible company.
And
by the way, in the private markets, it's been increasing its valuation like 60% a year.
Yeah.
And they keep executing. Incredible
and they move
technology.
Into defense. They've been, speaking of working with government, they've been they grabbed that Defense Department contract, which they had never moved into that gang of like crooks, of real crooks.
But the winner there is NASA and the Defense Department, because what they're doing, they're taking advantage of the cheap capital being afforded by the public market's excitement around space. And they're saying, okay, you build our capsule.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful outcome of all the excitement around space, and that is our government agencies are getting access to that cheap capital indirectly.
Yep. Yeah, it should be interesting. I think it's exciting. I don't know about off Twitter and his game. His game's something he just likes to wade into this stuff and be the golden.
Yeah, it was one word, but it sent the stock screaming. Yeah, I think about 60%.
He loves jitting up all his base and stuff like that.
So. But you know, there's something here to. It goes back. I've obviously been thinking a lot about this, but you know that Professor Cipolla's quadrants, where you have one axis that is good for society, one that is good for yourself. Intelligent people do good things for society that are good for themselves. Stupid people do things that are bad for themselves and bad for society. And then they call them the helpless or artists, people who mm-hmm. do good things for society, but it's bad for them. Mm-hmm. And then there's the bandits, people who do bad things for society, but good things for themselves. You might say, okay, Mark Zuckerberg is a bandit. You could say Andy Jassy, if you wanted to be kind, or Tim Cook are the intelligent, good for the world, mm-hmm. good for themselves. People would describe the mob that overran the Capitol as the stupid, bad for themselves and bad for society. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of these billionaires who have been, and some Congress people, quite frankly, ranging mm-hmm. from AOC and Ted Cruz, who have been posing for the millennial cameras and saying that this movement is wonderful around the Wall Street Bets movement, and maybe it's a new way to value stocks. I generally don't think they believe that. I think that we're going to look back and say, should you have been egging them on and telling them, that saying things publicly? Because I think, I can't look into their heart, but these are very intelligent people that understand capital formation. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to think, okay, do you really think that this is a movement and that what they're doing is ultimately going to be good for them? And
I don't think they think, Scott. I think you give them enormous amounts of credit. I think they just like the reaction. They like the applause. They like, you know.
I think they're all trying to grab the millennial vote.
Why would they? I think they aren't. I think they just, a lot of these people are intuitive, like reactive people. All of the people you mentioned do not think as much as they should, given their
ready, fire, aim.
Yep, exactly. All of them. They have that in common. I hate to say they're like Ted Cruz, and I don't think Ted Cruz and AOC are alike. I think she's like runs circles around him in so many ways. But I think it's interesting. But we have to move on. We have to move on. We're going to take a listener mail. Anyway, Elon will be fine. Him and Jeff will do the battle for the skies, and all of us will benefit, hopefully, in some way, unless they rain down.
Would you?
Something.
Well, let me ask you this: would you pay a quarter of a million?
No.
Not even a quarter of a million. Would you pay $10,000 to go into space?
No.
Would you go
into
space?
I have no interest in it.
100% No. I'm with you.
100%.
Let's not go to space together. You and
never
me.
Never in a million years. But I didn't bungee jump when everyone else was doing it. Anyway, moving on. Let's take a listener mail question.
You've got.
I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Hi, guys. Really big fan of yourself, Kara, and of course, you too, Scott. My question is around Facebook. Full disclosure, I have been working at Facebook 2.5 years. It's the first job coming out of university for me. They've been great employers, but because I also love tech and I love listening to you guys speak and other thought leaders in this field, I've noticed there's been, you know, a lot of negative feedback on the brand overall since I've joined, even. And I was just kind of wondering, do you guys have any positive sort of sentiment towards Facebook? Do you think we still have a role to play in the world? If not, why? I'd love to hear it. Thank you.
Oh, Sahil. He's a really big fan of mine, and you too, Scott. That's my favorite part of this entire.
Oh, and you.
Oh, you. And
it's
you.
Like that.
Over
okay,
there.
By the way, I just want to point out that Representative Khanna goes on to Twitter and says, it was great being on Pivot with the inimitable, incredibly thoughtful Kara Swisher. And then, you know, he said, and Scott too.
That's our new thing. And
thanks
Scott
for the,
too.
Thanks for the big wet kiss there, Representative. It was literally like his press agent said,
"You didn't kill CEOs like I do."
You have to mention that guy too. You have to mention that guy.
You don't actually kill CEOs like I do. That's why.
Listen,
Sahil.
Pucker up, Representative.
This is just a regular guy who feels the same way, Scott. This is how it's going to go for you. Listen to me.
I think that's a Scottish accent. Hello.
No, I don't think Sahil.
That wasn't Scottish?
No, it's not. No. Anyway, I'm not even going to go into it with you. That's why they say.
You're being very unloving to me today. You are being hostile.
You were late.
I was a
late
few minutes
and I
late,
have things
and you're
to
like,
do.
Let's get going. I'm like, it's like, it's like whenever, anyways.
There's not enough hugs in the world. Speaking of hugs in the world, no,
gotta
I don't have anything positive to say.
Investing in our relationship. I will try.
Listen, Sahil, can you think of something positive about Facebook, Scott? I like Instagram sometimes.
It's not just about forgiving me. It's about forgiving yourself,
All right, let's talk about Facebook. Instagram is fun sometimes, and I like the ads. I don't know what to say, Sahil.
Okay, I had two thoughts hearing that question. The first was, did he have to clear this through the 800-person information bureau that is Facebook to ask this question?
No.
And they're like, is there a way you could make Sheryl seem more likable when you ask the question? Anyways, I think Facebook is a net of all of big tech.
Yeah.
Most of them are net good for society. The problem is with the word net, that we think, well, if they're net good, let's leave them alone. No, we should regulate them. Google is a net good. Amazon's a net good. Apple's a net good. We just need to go in and take away a lot of the externalities of bad. Yeah. I think Facebook is unique, and that is, I believe, on balance, in aggregate, is a net negative for the world.
That is a good way of putting it, Scott.
But that's not to mean there isn't tremendous value and opportunity that couldn't be unlocked if quite frankly, they had entirely different company or different leadership.
What would they do? How could they be good? Because I think the business plan, engagement and enragement are the thing that is most important there. I think it's hard to figure out a different way to do it. And they just things pop up. Even the best intentions, you get this crap. And they don't always have.
I think you've bought into the narrative that, they're trapped. They're forced to be evil people. No, they're not. These algorithms of amplification.
They can change it. They can change it.
They could move to subscription. They could take WhatsApp independent and have it be the new collaborative tool. WhatsApp should have been basically Teams and Slack and TikTok, I don't think, would have gotten any oxygen had WhatsApp been an independent company. I think you would have seen a lot more innovation from WhatsApp if
you
kept the leadership there and kept it independent.
I am wrong. You are correct.
Look, there's enormous, it's like at Star Wars, I see good in you, I see the light. Facebook, we see the light in you. You've got to get Cersei and Daenerys off the fucking Iron Throne. You've got to get Zuckerberg.
Are you insulting women again, as usual? They weren't the worst characters, were they? Cersei?
Cersei's pretty bad.
She was poignant.
Powerful female leadership role on TV. Yeah. I think she was a great role model. She was very good.
In any case, there is things, you're right. Facebook could do a lot of things. I recently did an interview with Kevin Roos about this, who has been a great Facebook critic, also in a lot of ways, very damning of Facebook. Two things. One is they can change the algorithm anytime and it gets better, just like knocking President Trump off Twitter. Second thing is, and they can do it, and they've done it. They've done it, and they've changed it back, and it shows positive things. And the other one that Alex Stamos, who we've had on the podcast many times, the thing that he said is that they have all these people they hire about civic engagement and better community, and then they let the growth team take over no matter what. Why hire them at all if they're going to let the growth team make decisions?
Alex Stamos be an interesting CEO?
No.
No, he strikes me as very likable and thoughtful.
He is. His project, but I think he made the good point. It's like they have those people there; they just ignore them. And you know that, Nanny. You know about those organizations where they bring in a person who's supposed to make things better and give them no power. What's all the diversity that people like stuff like
that? It's optics. They're brought in for optics.
Yeah, but give them
like
no power.
Like when Facebook brings in Ken Chenal under their board, and Ken Chenal's like, "No, I'm not going to be involved in this if you're not going to listen to me."
Yep, exactly. So
I want to make the world a better place, and if you're not going to let me,
we're going to finish this up. What would you advise young employees of Facebook to interact? How would you advise them to interact by leaving?
It's easy to be generous and righteous with other people's livings. I think people who work at Facebook, it's an incredible opportunity for them. Their first obligation is to develop economic security for them and their families. I have no beef with people who work at Facebook. But I think a lot of them are coming to their own conclusion that time after time, there always seems to be an excuse for not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And it's not a collective decision. It's a decision made by Mark Zuckerberg. There's a reason why the majority of his senior leadership, other than Sheryl, kind of drop like flies. And I think a lot of them just say—
they don't. There's a lot of those people stay too.
Well, whenever they acquire a company, it seems like the founders end up leaving.
Yes, the founders do. The old employees are still there around him.
Well, they have options that are it's probably hard to leave at this point. Look, I don't, everyone has to make a conscious decision around where they work. The people that worked at Exxon were good people. The people who worked at Altria were good people. But you are working, there's just no getting around it. You're working for a company. Social media in itself is addictive. It's like nicotine. Pinterest is addictive. you know, Snap is addictive. But the shit that gives you cancer is these algorithms of amplification in the ad model. Yeah. And Facebook is giving our society cancer. So you work for a cigarette company.
Unfortunately, the stock is so high. It's really like they the minute another CEO comes in and starts throttling this back, they're going to get attacked. So that's the issue. They've got to have Mark do it. Mark has to say, you know what? I run this place. I don't really care. Like, well, I work.
He has. That's what's so upsetting is that he has the power.
He does. He
to put stakeholders over shareholders because it's a dual class. The whole. Let's go back to dual class shareholder companies, which are a violation of governance. It said it's not one person, one vote. It's everything matters. It's Kremlin governance. Everything matters until there's something I don't like and I get to decide. So it's not real governance. It's total. Yeah. The Ford family does it with 6% of the company. They get to control it. The Sulzbergers get to control the New York Times with 15% of the company. It was originally the initial justification for why corporate governance should be Kremlin-like governance is that media is so important that we shouldn't be subject to the vagaries and short-term needs of people who might come in and say, I don't like the way you're talking about you know, war in Iraq, I'm going to take you over and I'm going to influence you. It was supposed to be, they pitched it as a protection for a net good for society. And guess what? It's backfired. It's now a net bad. He could say these algorithms of amplification are bad. We need to dramatically change our business model. And by the way, it's going to cost a shit ton of money and our shares are going to get cut in half, but I have a vision for this. And he could do it. He could do it.
He doesn't think it. I'm going to, Sahil, we don't have any answers for you. You should go to another company. Andy Jassy's a really cool guy. That's what I'd say. Anyway. All right, Scott, one more quick break. I got to go soon. I got things to do. We'll be back for predictions.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Okay, Scott, you got to do a short one. I got some things to do today that I got to get to.
You need to be more loving towards your co-host.
Today is not a loving day. I'll call you later and I'll be nice to you on the phone. I'll send you like
I need that. You know, I need that. You know, I like it. I need it.
So, prediction time fast because Kara Swisher's got somewhere to go.
Okay, so GameStop is reattaching to the fundamentals. And this time last week when we said, and I believe our exact words were, these people were going to get smoked.
They are getting smoked.
peaked exactly 7 days ago. The stock was at 476. It peaked, and now I believe it opened at 71 this morning.
So no tendies, as they say.
Well, specialty retail, whether it's, you could argue Best Buy is big box, but Williams-Sonoma, Restoration Hardware, Abercrombie & Fitch, Urban Outfitters, generally trade somewhere between 0.2 and 1x revenues. GameStop. So my prediction is very straightforward. The GameStop is reattaching to the fundamentals, and within 2 weeks is going to be trading somewhere between 25 and 50 bucks a share. The reattachment is happening. And also everybody posing again for Millennial Cameras says this is a new era of investing. No, it's not. The best regulator in the world, the best regulator in the world are the pain from mistakes. And there's tremendous informal regulation going on right now. All the attacks I was getting because I didn't get it, and I was a boomer protecting my hedge fund buddies, and I was crying because of my losses, none of which were true. And all of a sudden, it just went dark. It just went dark. Because you know what's happening? You know what's happened? A bunch of people said, hold the line. You know, storm the castle so they could get rich. And there is so much pain out there right now, and this thing is reattaching to the fundamentals, and it's going to be 25 to 50 bucks. And they say it's a new era in investing. No, it's not, because guess what?
Let me step in. Here's what's new. I'm going to step in. I'm going to step in your thing. In some cases, there's always going to be a short squeeze kind of company situation. And this shows that people can do this on certain stocks. But these short squeezes are very, not rare, but they're not, what really matters is the fundamentals and making, if you're interested in investing, I think it's a great thing. And I think more people should be investing, not just rich people, not just.
Define investing.
So do research, pick companies, make good decisions, and stop playing the speculation game. Like, I get that you want a part of this stupid part of Wall Street, but the casino part and the speculation part is, it makes nothing, it creates nothing, it doesn't help people, it doesn't give people jobs, it's just a lot of bullshit. And so you can play that game, but when you play that game, you're going to get burned one way or the other, or you're not. Like, it does. You're either screwing someone or being screwed. And so I don't understand why people want to play that game in any way that's productive to society. So it's fine that more people are involved. And if you want to do this thing, but you are going to really, if you don't time it right, if you don't do the right thing and you think it's an emotional thing, it's all about money for most of the people that are playing it.
That's right. And speaking of money, here's what the research shows. 80% of day traders lose money.
Yeah.
And we know what it comes right down to. It's very simple. The more you trade, the more money you lose.
Yeah.
What percentage of people who have invested in a number of stocks and left them in there for 20 years have lost money? Zero. Zero. It's exactly what Warren Buffett said. It's not timing the market. It's time in the market. Not as much fun. Not as much fun. But investing is about finding good companies or even just buying the indices, low cost indices. It's your investment strategy, quite frankly. It's putting money away and putting things away and not thinking about it. The biggest mistakes I've made in investing were, one, getting into this day trading phenomena for about a week with iOmega. But it was a great lesson for me because it happened early. And I sold, I bought Netflix at $12 a share. That's the good news. It's at 550. I sold it at 10 to like take a tax loss or something and never bought it back. Find good companies, put them away. And then if you love trading, if you really love the markets,
go to Las Vegas.
Well, not if it's dope a hit, fine.
You'll get free drinks.
But recognize the dope a hit costs money. But if you love the markets, and I get the sense a lot of these people really love the markets, then try and get some certification and some training and go into the industry and get armed with great research and armed with supercomputers. I do think one of the positive outcomes here is that a lot of young people have been inspired by the markets, and the markets are a wonderful way to make a living. But if you're looking to make money, if you're looking to invest, boy, 80% of day traders lose money. And that's what these people are learning a very hard lesson on.
This is a game. This is a game, and it is a tough game, and it's a nasty game. And again, my focus is, like, you're not helping anybody. You're helping yourself. And I'm glad that some people made money and are able to pay for their parents' rent. There's a lot of cool stories like that out there. And screwing the man, sure, that's great. That's great. But this is not, the real power lies in ownership of really great companies, creating jobs, et cetera. This is just like anything else that's like gambling. It's fine. I like gambling. I do it myself, but
it's fun,
I know what it is.
It's fun,
I know what
it
is.
No, you're probably going to lose it all. It's consumption.
Yep, it's consumption.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And if you learn...
I support the idea, and I do think a lot of those short sellers need to be kicked in the teeth. I love watching them being kicked in the teeth.
Well, that was fun, no doubt about it. And if there's any regulation, it should be across all the hedge funds that have been trying to pull this shit for the last 20 or 30 years.
We don't like them anymore, but we don't like you either in that regard. You know what I mean? Like, who's screwing who? It doesn't...
Anyway, you asked for a prediction. My prediction is GameStop stock within it's already happening. Within 2 weeks, will be between 25 and 50 bucks a share. Okay. And everyone posing from the millennial cameras has said this is a new approach to investing. So many people, for every story that's been publicized about someone paying off their mortgage, there's more stories about someone who got egged on and thought they were part of a movement and didn't understand the technology and the technicals of this stock and went in and got smoked. And I think the lesson here is going to, the informal regulation that's going to happen here in the market dynamics are that the warriors who will hold the line and take a spear in the chest for you, the bandit, the person trying to make money off of them, those people are going to rethink it the next time. Yeah. And I just don't think you're going to see the same level. I don't think you're going to see as many what I'll call crowd squeezes.
We'll see. It's interesting. It sure is interesting. That's all I have to say. Okay, Scott. That's the show. I'm sorry if I wasn't nice to you, but I really do bring... No, don't even start. You if someone's even shows you one, says, oh, you're late, you get you're hurting my feelings. Come on.
Got to start investing in the relationship.
I'm short squeezing our relationship. That's what I'm
going to do. Kara, this is the real question. Are you angry at me or are you angry at yourself?
I'm never angry at myself.
Are you angry at yourself?
I am literally never angry at myself.
So, Zach, I'm being serious for a moment. One of the keys to living a happy, rewarding life is not only bringing forgiveness to others, because in every relationship, both parties will at some point screw up, is bringing forgiveness, but also bringing forgiveness to yourself. At the end of life, you know what people's biggest regrets are?
What?
Well, that they hadn't invested more in the relationships, that they hadn't lived the life that they wanted to live instead of what society wanted them to live. Okay. And also, they wish they'd been more forgiving of themselves. They wish they'd been less hard on themselves. So be less hard on yourself and love the girl.
I'm not hard on myself.
Love the girl.
I love myself. Dude, I'm fine on all those things. I'm good.
You're angry. You're being mean to yourself. You're being mean to yourself. Okay, today's
Scott.
Episode.
All right, today's that's the episode. Show. Go to New York Magazine, nymag.com/pivot to submit your question for the podcast. The link is also in our show notes. Scott, I am leaving you right now. I got to go. I got to go do something. All right. I adore you, Scott.
Bring forgiveness.
It's because of major mental issues I have. That's why I like you. Anyway, read us out.
Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Ernie Intratot engineered this episode. Thanks also to Hannah Rosen and Drew Burrows. Make sure you've subscribed to the show on Apple Podcasts, or if you're an Android user, check us out on Spotify, or frankly, wherever you listen to podcasts. If you liked our show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Pivot from New York Magazine and Vox Media. We'll be back next week for a breakdown of all things tech and business. Life is not about what happens to you. It's about how you react to what happens to you. Forgive yourself. Don't be so hard on yourself. Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Productivity. It's a word we tend to obsess over. Am I being productive enough? Is my team being productive enough? But how do we even measure productivity when our team might be distributed across the globe? With 11,000 plus employees around the world, Atlassian knows a thing or two about distributed work. No matter if you're a team of 2 or 2 million, or if you're around the corner or on another continent, Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom keep everyone connected and moving together as one towards shared goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's ATLASSIAN.com. Atlassian.